Brought to you by Black Knight, it's the Technology.ie podcast, episode 2 for Tuesday, October 4th, 2011, with Michaela Nealon and Conor Muinneach. Kath Falcheroy, hello and welcome to the Technology.ie podcast. This is Conor Muinneach in the studio, and somewhere on the internet is Michaela Nealon, CEO of Black Knight. Hello, Michaela.
Morning, Con. How are you?
I'm not bad. Where in the world are you today?
Oh, well, I'm terribly boring this morning. I'm actually in Carlow in our offices.
Very good.
Feeling a little bit like a pincushion since I've just got a whole load of vaccinations for a trip I'm going on next month.
Excellent.
Or actually later this month.
Where is that?
Senegal, going to Dakar.
All right. We'll talk more about that maybe in a while. As listeners may know, we mentioned it in episode 1. This is episode 2 of the Technology.ie podcast. It's going to be presented like this on a weekly basis with myself, Conor Muinneach, in the studio and Michaela Nealon, sometimes in his own office at Black Knight in Carlow and sometimes all over the world, depending where you happen to be travelling. And we talked a little bit last week about the equipment that we're using for that. And the blog post I will do this week, Michaela, I promise, because there's been a lot of interest in it. We've got a lot of feedback on the programme from people, and some people expressing interest as well in what we talked about in relation to the equipment last week.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting because we've had a few people getting into the real kind of geeky parts of it, like, you know, why does X sound like Y, and, you know, this kind of stuff. I mean, all sorts of questions and queries that I think are... I mean, it's cool. I wasn't expecting it.
We'll talk about that in a minute. Just to stress and clarify that feedback is very welcome indeed. Keep it coming and leave your comments on the blog at technology.ie or send us audio. We've got some audio on the programme from some listeners as well this morning. Later in the programme as well, our special guest on the programme this week is Alan O'Rourke of Spoilt Child Design, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about the importance of design. But let's talk about some of the comments that we've got from people, first of all. And I want to start with a comment. You were talking about audio there. Digital Dara left us a comment on the website at technology.ie. He was reckoned we were using some kind of noise cancellation in it. You referred all that to me, Michaela, and I wrote a big long response to him there as well.
You did. I mean, you went into lots of details about
yes,
the levelator.
The levelator.
It seems to be like, a bit like the Terminator, but not
the levelator
without
is
an Austrian accent.
The levelator is a cool tool, and it goes back actually to the early days of podcasting, and there were some very interesting pioneers in podcasting going back to 2004, 2005. I don't know if you've ever listened to IT Conversations, Michele.
No, I haven't.
No. It's a non-profit organisation that specialise in recording audio from conferences, especially technical conferences that might be going on around the world. One of the people involved with it is a man called Doug Kay. And Doug is someone whose blog I followed for a long time. At one point, he had a startup as well called Gigavox Media, which I think they sold on to another company at some point. But one of the things that came out of the development that they were doing was this development of a tool called the Levelator. There's a link to it on the blog. People can read more about it. It's hard to know sometimes how much technical detail we should go into, but I think you can err on the side of detail in relation to this particular audience that we've got here, Michele. They don't mind the geeky stuff.
Well, I certainly hope they don't. Yeah. So they're going to be very upset if they do.
Someone else who was in touch was Keola Donaghy, who's another old friend of mine from the early days of podcasting, and Keola lives in Hawaii. He and I share an interest, I suppose, in minority languages. One of those, of course, is Irish in my case. Keola has Irish heritage and is interested in the Irish language as well, but he's very involved as an activist for the Hawaiian language, and which is why he had a particular interest in a post that you had done where you talked about internationalised domain names. What's that about, Michele?
Well, the thing is this, if you look at your standard .coms, like, you know, blackknight.com, it's all Latin script, standard ASCII characters. In other words, there's no accents, there's no squiggly bits hanging off letters, there's no, you know, things, there's no fathers, accent grave, sisadil, any of those kind of things. It's just very, very straightforward. But
ASCII only allows to representation of 256 characters, basically, isn't it? It's simply 8-bit, isn't that it?
Yeah, that's the basic thing is that, you know, standard domain names are fine if your mother language is English. If your mother language is anything else, it's a bit limited. There's no way to put accents on anything, on a letter, on any letters. So the IDNs, simply put, is being able to put accents on the domain. So, for example, I registered mihal.eu.
With fathers.
With the fathers,
yes,
exactly.
Yeah, or the acute accents, I suppose, as they'd be described in other languages. We call them father in Irish, which
means to elongate.
To elongate. So the vowel, for example, I becomes E, etc. A becomes A.
Exactly.
Irish speakers know about all this. But anyway, to spell Micheál...
Well, actually, they don't. That's the funny thing. I only found out what a father was when I was about 22 because nobody bothered telling me.
But as you said in your blog post, Michaela, you're interested in languages and you're very interested in some European languages and that as well. And this is an issue. We have Unicode now, and you can have, if your character encoding is set up correctly on your browser, you can represent pretty much any language in the world on the browser page, but not so the case for domains. So what's the difference in relation to this? How did you manage to register mihal.eu with those non-standard characters?
Well, it's up to every domain registry, be that, you know, URID for .eu, VeriSign for .com, IDR for .ie, or any of the, you know, whichever domain extension it is. They have the choice to enable IDNs or not. And also they have the choice of how they're going to enable them, because there's a lot of different character sets and scripts. So in the case of .eu, they enable them for the character sets and scripts within the European Union. So that means that, you know, you can put the accents on for French, Spanish, and those kind of things. And then there's also some other more kind of complicated ones. And then if you look, say, in the Russian Federation, they've gone one step further. They've got a fully internationalized domain name. In other words, they have the IDN characters after the dot, you know, on the right-hand side,
okay,
not just before the dot.
Okay.
But it's a complicated issue because... Like, you go to mihal.eu in Safari or Firefox or Internet Explorer, you won't see the nice little accents in your browser. You'll end up going to xn-mchel-0qa4f.eu, which is the Punycode representation of Mihal.
What's Punycode?
Well, it's a way of converting between the, you know, the rich UTF-8 and your not so rich ASCII, basically.
Okay.
So the thing is that what a browser should be able to do is when it sees that when you're going through to this website with all the accents on the domain, it should go, oh, that's xn-whatever, and we know what that is. That's in my whitelist, and then it'll display.
Okay.
But there's problems with the .eu ones at the moment. They're not on the whitelist.
Oh, I see. So, for example, and does .ie support this? Do you know?
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
Obviously. Which is a pity, because I think a lot of Gaelgors would like to actually register their personal name or even their business name. Oscar, I think they should have that option.
Well, I think it's something that perhaps people might consider lobbying about, but it'll be interesting. It's early days yet, I suppose, for this, really, isn't it?
Well, not really, no. I mean, you know, .eu launched IDN, I think it was like 18 months ago.
Okay.
The technology itself, I mean, there's different ways of implementing it, but it's been around for a couple of years. It's not like kind of, oh, this happened last week. I mean, Colm, you're a bit of a Gaelgor now. Wouldn't you like to have Colm Mina Colm with all the accents in the right places, .ie?
I certainly would, and it's something generally that I think twice about before typing my my name with the correct characters into any situation or into any kind of text box. I always wonder, you know, is this going to be rendered properly? So it is something I'd be interested in. But again, I suppose from my point of view, I'd want to feel that it was fully supported and that it wouldn't cause confusion for users or for people that I would be expecting to use my URL and visit my domain. So I think it's early days for it, and I think we'd want to see it supported and have some confidence that it is being supported properly. Anyway, that's people can read more about that. It's in the comments on podcast number one. You can read Keola's comment and Michaela's response, and we've linked to Michaela's post on that as well. And we got some, interestingly enough, Keola was someone who was a podcasting pioneer for me going back, say, to 2005, 2006. And another person person who was also got in touch and left a comment as well, and that's Brian Green. Did you know that Brian is, I think, probably Ireland's first podcaster, Michaela?
It doesn't surprise me. I didn't know it, but it doesn't surprise me at all. Brian, he's a force to be reckoned with.
He is, absolutely. So, Brian, you put out a tweet on Twitter and you asked people for some feedback on episode one of the podcast. And Brian sent us this.
Michaela, you say you're looking for some feedback on your podcast.
Ouch.
Oh. I won't clip that one down. Right, see you. Bye.
Thanks. Thanks for the feedback, Brian. He also did send us some constructive feedback in a tweet in response to that as well.
Thankfully.
But that is a typical Brian sense of humour. And well done, Brian. And thanks for that. But I do want to stress as well that if people do want to send us in audio, it's very welcome indeed if they want to send it in to... how can they submit audio? I suppose if they tweet it and upload it someplace. Will we give them an email address, Michaela, or will we just ask people...
Let them tweet it to us. It's easier. Yeah. I mean, both myself and yourself are easy enough to find on Twitter. And if there's also the Black Knight Twitter account, you can always tweet that.
Yeah, okay. So, and yes, and basically the centre place for all of your comments and feedback is on technology.ie. Let's move on. We were talking about TLDs a little bit last week, and you sent me a link, Michaela, to a new contest for top-level domains, which is being organised by a company called Afilias. Tell me about that.
Well, do you know who... I mean, Afilias themselves are an interesting company. They're officially registered as an Irish company, and they run the back end for several of the domain extensions that we all use on a daily basis. Like they run .info, they also run .mobi, .me, and a few of the country code domains. And this is quite an interesting idea. What they're doing is they're looking for a concept, something unique, some way of... It's not just a kind of, here's this cool domain extension that somebody might want to get, but it's like, what could you do with a domain that you can't do at the moment? And by domain, I mean the domain extension, not just a single domain. Mm. So, what kind of innovative use could you put to a domain? I don't know, it'll be interesting to see now what kind of things people will come up with. It's the competition... opens on the 3rd of October and it closes on the 17th. So, it's only a two-week time window and you can win up to $5,000 as the first prize. And they've got, an interesting group of people on the in there. You've got Kevin Murphy from Domain Insight as one of the judges, David Rogers from Columbia Business School, Matthew Quint from Columbia Business School, and the former CEO of ICANN, Paul Toomey, is another one of them. So it'd be interesting to see. I mean... you see, Dotel was pretty innovative, and they, storing contact details in the DNS securely. It'd be interesting to see what other kind of ideas people come up with. And the thing as well is they're looking at it in terms of, .brand or .niche. So it's not just, a case of some kind of wide open registration thing. Is there some idea for something kind of cool and funky that people could do with a domain name that they couldn't do now?
With a top-level domain name, they mean specifically, is it?
As in the domain extension. Sorry.
Okay, excellent. Well, we'll put a link to that into the notes going along with the podcast if people want to follow the link to Afilias.info. That's the company address that's the company that's behind this, and you can find out more about that there. Let's move on. When we were starting this, Michaela, we decided that we would need some kind of collaborative bookmarking tool. This is why we thought, let's go and take a look at Delicious. Now, Delicious has languished for several years. While it was in the ownership of Yahoo, did it not? It was an interesting tool, I think, at the start, and then nothing really happened with it. And now it's been rescued.
It was bought out there a few months ago. So they're kind of transitioning the accounts over from
Yahoo accounts.
Yeah, from Yahoo accounts to native, as it were.
Had you used it much in its original incarnation, Michaela?
I've been using it heavily for years.
Have you?
I suppose relatively heavily. I've got like 7,000 links, whatever it's on there. More recently, I've started collecting links automatically, which is kind of lazy in some ways, but at the same time,
how do you mean automatically harvesting them from your tweets and things like that? Is it?
Yes. Okay. Yes. There's a service called Packrati.us, and what they do is they will monitor various social networks, and what they'll do is they'll pull the links out from your posts on those social networks and associate them with your Delicious account.
Okay.
Okay. The time with a couple of other services, but it just means I can go back. It means if I tweet a link or somebody shares a link with me and I tweet it, retweet it, or whatever, I can then go back in afterwards and I can add more details about it and I can find it. But the big problem I have is, you know, I see something shiny that I like, but then I can't find a link to the damn thing afterwards.
So why do you use it, Michele? Why are you putting links in Delicious? Are you doing it for yourself so that you can have them available across different computers and different environments that you're in? Are you doing them to share with others? Why is
mainly,
it?
I started doing it mainly so that I would be able to access... if you've got to remember, I started using the internet back in 1994 or 95, and I used to have an actual physical notebook in which I had a list of the websites that I used to visit on a regular basis. I mean, so my bookmarks were, well, they involved a book.
Yes.
You know, that doesn't scale, obviously.
No.
And nowadays, I have multiple machines. I've got my desktop here in the office. I've got a MacBook Pro that comes with me whenever I'm traveling. I have a desktop at home.
So the idea is that you've got your links available to you no matter what machine you're logged in on. That's great. But what about the other thing this offers is a social element to this, the fact that you can you can bookmark links, you can tag them, other people who might be following those tags or following you personally can find those links, and you can do the same likewise as well. Is that any value to you? Do you use that part of it?
Not as much as I probably could. And I think part of the reason for that is, as you mentioned, it kind of languished. So yeah. A lot of the people that are kind of using, you know, social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, etc., they're probably not really using Delicious or any of the other services. But like Delicious isn't the only show in town.
No.
It's very hard to share if there's nobody to share it with. I mean, like if I look at my own network, I don't know about you, but my network on Delicious isn't exactly gigantic.
No, and I'm the same, and I've never really used it in that way, and I really only use it when I have a link that I want to save and I want this to be available to me across different machines and things like that. But, you know, you could always see the potential or the possibility that was there. Now it's been, rescued from Yahoo and been bought by these guys, and they're trying to relaunch it. They've done so last week, and there are some new features which I haven't fully got my head around, and I just want to kind of declare our interest here, which is that we thought we might be able to use Delicious, and we're not sure that we can't either. I think it might be possible for us to use Delicious to bookmark stories in advance of us recording the technology.ie podcast, to give other people an opportunity to send us links as well in that way. And so far, so good. We've been using it. The new feature they've added is called Stacks. So we set up a stack, and a stack is a kind of a way to group a whole lot of links together on a particular theme. They have a little YouTube video, I think, inside in the help section on Delicious to explain it all. And they've used an illustrative example of somebody who wants to know all about mustaches. So he creates a stack about mustaches. And it's a way of having these links look very pretty, I think, on the page. And it arranges it all in a kind of a nice magazine style for you on the page in front of you. It's lovely, but I'd like to see some features, Michele. For example, being able to share a stack, or getting a widget where you could embed a stack, for example, on the technology.ie page. And I don't see that kind of functionality there yet.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, you can share a stack with another user, but in other words, I can send the stack to a user I know about, or I can send the stack to an email address or something like that. But that's kind of boring. That's not what I want. What we wanted to do. We wanted to have a stack, or some other, you know, concept, you know, thing that both of us could contribute to.
That we could call out the URL on the podcast and say, go to delicious.com/technology.ie/stack or something like that. But there isn't even a friendly URL for it.
Well, the friendly URL I wouldn't worry too much about. We can always overcome that ourselves. I mean, yeah. I've got my URL shortener for the company. I'm sure you have one too. But it's very, as you said, like it's very limited in functionality. There's nothing here. I mean, let's say if you go, I remember back before they did this relaunch, maybe only a couple of weeks back, you could go into the Delicious website and there were various, what would you call them, kind of widgety type things that you could use and other bits of code that you could grab off there to embed stuff in blogs and what have you. And there's information here about doing stuff with the API, but you need to be a hardcore geek to do anything with it, because it's all, you know, this is the API, you know, using HTTPS, HTTP auth, blah 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 blah.
Like, forget about it.
Well,
I presume the more user-friendly features will come.
Well, will they though? I mean, are they going to work on the basis that it's going to be up to the community to come up with useful ways of using the stuff, or are they going to do stuff themselves? I mean, you take, say, Twitter as a prime example. Twitter has added features over the last couple of years, but a lot of the features that it's added are things that third parties had added previously.
Yes.
If you think about it. So it's like they didn't experiment or do it or really invest in a lot of that stuff themselves. You know, other people did it, you know, found a solution to the problem, and then Twitter adopted it themselves.
That's right.
Whereas I think we talked about that in the previous discussion.
Introduced their own client or their own service and laid waste to the people who had developed the whole area. But that's a whole other problem or a whole other thing to talk about. We'd like to know what the listeners think as well about this. Check out the new Delicious if you have been a user of it in the past. Leave us a comment on technology.ie. Let us know what you think we could use as some kind of collaborative, crowdsourced, community-based kind of tool for this. I mean, what we've been doing really, Michaela, since we started this has been we've always, both of us, I suppose, looked for stories that we're interested in, tagged them, bookmarked them, tweeted them, whatever. Now we're doing so with a view to including them in the podcast. And so what would be the best way, I suppose, to engage with the community of listeners on that? If there are other services, there are things like Dig and Reddit and things like that, that might or might not be suitable as well. Let us know what you think. I want to talk about we're kind of into awards season now, Michele. And last Friday, you went along to the Net Visionary Awards. That's run by the Irish Internet Association. I presume you were there in a sponsor's role?
Well, yeah, we were this year. I mean, we sponsored the Best Use of Social Media category as we won it. We won it last year. So this year we were in sponsoring it. I mean, we've, you know, for several years we used to just get nominated, never won anything. Right. Then we won a bunch of them. So, you know, we went along. It's always good fun.
How many were there? Was it a big, well-attended event?
I honestly don't know how many people were there, but I suppose a couple of hundred. They held it this year in the National Gallery. And that seems to be like a completely new building. I mean, beautiful light and very airy and, you know, very, very attractive building. And there was a good turnout. And Jerry Kennelly, guy who formed Stockbike, yes, down in Kerry and then sold it to Getty for... how many figures? Was it nine figure sum or something?
Something like that. 100 and something million, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I mean, serious money. he received the award as net visionary, as in the
okay.
And I, you know, this he's got some interesting ideas, and he gave an interesting enough talk, a little speech about, you know, the vision he had at the time, and you know, and it was kind of cool because, you know, they were one of the first stock photography sites available on the internet back when they started. And, you know, Getty's way of kind of dealing with these things, I suppose, is they just swallow up all their competitors over Fair time. Enough. But no, it's good. I mean, interesting. It was a good event.
Any highlights from the winners? Anything that sticks out in particular for you?
Well, the thing with the visionaries is they don't get to give a talk. They don't get to give an acceptance speech or anything like that. So you don't really get much of a feel for people unless you actually talk to them, you know, either before the event or at the kind of the afters, where there's usually kind of, you know, drinks somewhere and what have you. But it was good. Like the IDR CEO Dave Curtin gave a short talk as well, which was actually quite funny. But he was talking a lot about, you know, getting Irish businesses online and, you know, encouraging them to you know, do things online. I mean, as in actually have functioning e-commerce websites and everything else, which is, you know, it's a problem that pretty much every country has, that the, you know, the percentage of small businesses that are actively online is very, very, very low.
later this month as well, the Irish Web Awards are going to be held. That's Damien Mulley's award ceremony. This is, I think, the third or fourth year of this now, isn't it? The Blog Awards, of course, he started with. Then he came in with the Irish Web Awards. And now he's retired at the Blog Awards, and he's got the Social Media Awards, and the Irish Web Awards continue. That's on 22nd of October in the Mansion House in Dublin. I presume you'll be going to that?
I won't actually, because I'll be away. I will be in Dakar in Senegal, so I can't actually go to it, which is a pity. Because I mean, I was at it a couple of years. I've been there a couple of times, and I was also at the Social Media Awards. I mean, I love the Irish Web Awards. I think it's a really, really fantastic event, fantastic concept. Anybody who wants can enter. It can be entered in it, or you can enter yourself, or be entered by somebody else. And then it's, you know, they're judged by a large number of judges, and you know, this, you know, you end up with you know, whoever wins that, whoever makes it on the shortlist, is probably, you know, the cream of the submissions, and whoever actually wins that, you know, it's the real thing.
And in keeping, I suppose, with Damien's style and everything, it's perhaps you could probably say less stuffy than some of the some other award ceremonies that you could mention.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, he normally manages to rope in poor old Ricochet to act as the compere for the evening. And for those who are listening, who mightn't be in Ireland, Ricochet's a well-known Irish radio DJ with a wonderfully rich voice. I think his voice is fantastic. I mean, I love listening to him. I mean, I don't have to look at him. Not that there's anything wrong with looking at him, but you know what I mean? He's got that wonderful voice.
And
Damien can bounce off each other.
Yeah, and the wonderful thing is Rick is a blogger now. He may not be blogging as much as he used to, but he's a blogger and he's a tweeter, and he's someone who gets the internet and I think is very appropriate for this kind of thing as a result. He's not just the figurehead that's been brought in to present it.
Oh yeah, I mean he actually actively engages with the kind of Irish web community, which I think is fantastic. I must say that a lot of the Irish, a lot of the journals from RTE have been actively engaging.
That is something I think we should talk about on another show. Over the past, I suppose, 2 years now at this stage, there's been this huge influx of media people, professional media people. I presume it's the same in every country, but certainly here in Ireland, pick a journalist or a presenter or a producer of note, and you'll find they're actively tweeting and engaging, I think, very well with each other, with their own community and with their audience as well as a result. Or is that your impression of it?
Well, it's kind of a weird one. I mean, did you see that thing, where Ryan Tuberty decided that he wanted off Twitter, he couldn't take it anymore or something? I don't know.
That is, I think, one of the more, well, I think, you know, there may be sort of everyday sort of presenters and media people, and then there are people perhaps in Ryan Tuberty's category, I don't know, but that is definitely one of the most bizarre decisions I've ever seen a media person to make. But it turns out, excuse me, Michele, it turns out that somebody commented at the time that Ryan was not following very many people on Twitter, so maybe didn't really see it the way other people see it, or was not getting the Twitter experience. He couldn't see the value in it. I presume he logged in and he saw, he followed the perhaps #LateLate tag or the or any at replies to him perhaps commenting on any of his programmes, and you know, there's going to be a certain amount of criticism as well as praise in any kind of a stream like that, and probably thought, I'm not getting enough value out of this to justify the grief, or what did you think?
Well, to be honest, I just thought it was a very strange choice to make. I mean, it's like a bit like some of these people, you know, kind of let's make a massive announcement so that we can attract loads of media attention. I don't really understand that. I mean, if he didn't want to tweet or to engage in social media, well, fine. But does he have to make a big deal about the fact that he's not going to?
Well, I don't think he made a big deal about it. I think he just, I think his audience, he had a lot of followers. I certainly enjoyed his tweets, perhaps more than I enjoyed his programmes, but that's another story. But, you know, I certainly thought he was a very good contributor in the stream of, you know, about 1,000 people that I'm following on Twitter. And I think a lot of people were disappointed. He just announced in maybe one or two tweets that was it. He was closing the account. But I think a lot of people were disappointed. I know I was.
Yeah, well, I'm looking now. I mean, there's a Ryan Tuberty's ego Twitter account, which isn't him. I think this is this is one of these fake Twitter accounts. Actually, I might follow that one. It looks like it could be quite funny. I just find that, you know, this kind of thing about, you know, just because, you know, you're their famous celebrity, whatever, then, you know, that's, I don't really get that. Okay, so, so he actually deleted his account and it looks like somebody else grabbed it.
Oh, that was a mistake.
That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, this is the thing. I mean, where a lot of people, they don't realize that that can happen. So the Tubberty Tweets Twitter account is now coming up as not Ryan Tubberty. So it's not him. It's somebody else has taken it over. Now, I don't know. Look, sure, listen, if somebody wants, if he wants to.
Well, I think it's something. I think it's something, Michaela, that I suppose media people, perhaps, and celebrities, let's put it that way, you can see a huge variety in their responses to social media. And it's a difficult adjustment, I think, for many of them to make, especially people who have been, certainly people who have been, let's say, at the top, on the A-list in particular, are finding this democratic nature of social media and this two-way nature of it. You know, if you think about it, it's because traditionally, they would have broadcast their message to the masses and, you know, never heard of the kind of actual commentary that was going on the ground, surrounded by yes men, if you like, in many ways, and just being told, listen, you're doing a great job, and that's all good and well. But now all of a sudden, like, it's like the windows have been thrown open and they can hear the response.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at some of the, you know, the celebs on Twitter. I mean, I follow a bunch of them. I mean, I follow everything from kind of respectable politicians and film stars through TV show hosts through to porn stars. Just because I just find some of them are absolutely fascinating and hilarious to follow because like some of them, they're constantly having these conversations with a bunch of their personal friends. Yeah. And it just happens that we're able to kind of eavesdrop on that. So I suppose it's kind of a voyeuristic side to it. And others are using their network and their influence to, you know, promote charities and other kind of good things, I suppose, which is kind of interesting. But yeah, I mean, there's going to be different reactions. But I mean, you know, this is the problem with social media. Even if you're not that well known, you can find people abusing the system. Like, I mean, I've had issues there with certain people kind of, you know, taking
trolls.
Well. Not quite.
We've all had to get used to it, you see, and I think it's just an adjustment for anyone who is active online has to get used to trolling and has to get used to flaming and all the kind of things like that happen. And I think it can be an adjustment, and especially perhaps for people who have been maybe in an exalted position in the media, it might be a difficult adjustment.
Yeah, I mean, this, you know, it's very open. I mean, it's like back in the day, you know, you had the media was top down.
Yes.
You know, this is the news. This is our message. Deal with it. Well, it wasn't even a case of deal with it. This is our message. No further conversation or discussion allowed.
Yeah.
Now it's there's a lot of backwards and forwards, and I think that's great. I mean,
I think it's fantastic
scary as well. Though.
I think it's fantastic. I won't go into the details. Or I won't bore you with the details, Michaela. But I think it's so fantastic that I basically founded my company on the whole notion of this two-way democratic nature of media, and that was after 7 years' experience working in traditional media and being in this sort of exalted, rarefied position of you know, being the one who is selected to broadcast or the one who's selected to publish, which is all fine and grand, but you know, you think this two-way media I find much more exciting and much more interesting and much more compelling. We'll go into it. We'll talk about it again. We look forward to the Irish Web Awards. We're going to have Damien Mully to join us in a very, very soon on one of the episodes of technology.ie as well. So we'll be talking about that, I think, perhaps before the awards. We'll have to look at the schedule in relation to that. Something I wanted to touch on, and we'll only touch on it briefly, Michele. We are aware that some exciting new gadgets have been launched last week by Kindle, by Amazon, I should say. Three new versions of the Kindle. Perhaps an iPad killer, perhaps not. Certainly on the price point, that's very interesting. We won't go into the details so much about it, but next week we hope to talk a little bit more about it. We're recording and publishing this on Thursday, the 4th of October. Sorry, Tuesday, I should say, the 4th of October. And today Apple are making an announcement. I presume it's a new iPhone, Michele.
Well, the rumour mill, I mean, it's Apple, so the rumour mill has been running amok for you know, everything around Apple. I mean, this, the cult of Apple is like, you know, let's all bend down and and, you know, sacrifice ourselves on the altar of the Mac. And I'm a Mac user.
I was just going to say, yes, I can see you in front of the altar now, prostrate.
Well, I am. I'm here in front of my 27-inch iMac, which I do love. But the thing with Apple is, I mean, anytime Apple is going to make an announcement, the rumor mills go absolutely bananas. Mm. Is there going to be an announcement of a new iPad? Who knows? There might be, there might not be. I mean, what sounds fairly likely is that there might be some kind of new version of the iPhone.
There's no point speculating about it, really, because by the time this podcast comes out, it may well be public knowledge and all of that. So the point I want to make is we are going to come back to it next week. And also next week, this day next week, Samsung likely to announce in partnership with Google the latest Nexus phone, I think is what's anticipated, with the latest version of Android operating system. There's some interesting discussions. I think we have a whole programme we can devote to that. This week we want to talk about design. So if you'll stay with us, we'll be back in a moment with our special guest this week on the programme, who is Alan O'Rourke of Spoilchild Design, and he'll join us after the break.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Technology.ie podcast with Conam Wienicon, brought to you there, as you heard, by Black Knight, and also, of course, co-presented by Black Knight's CEO, Michaela Nealon. Michaela, you've got a special offer on .biz domain names at the moment?
Yeah, we do. I mean, .biz is one of those domain extensions that I think people kind of tend to overlook, which is, I think, a real pity. So we're doing a little to push them. So if you go to blackknight.biz, you can check to see if you can find a cool domain name.
And you've got perhaps more of a, one of the things about it is you have perhaps more of a chance of finding the domain name you want in that .biz domain than you would perhaps in the .com or .net.
Exactly. There's much more choice. And the other thing as well is that, you know, biz, you know, it, just think about it. I mean, do I have to explain what that means?
Especially if you're business. Especially if you're business to business or somebody, something like that. Check it out there. How much are they, Michele?
We're doing them for $5.99 XFAT.
That's for nothing.
Which is nothing. I mean, you can register a .biz for up to 10 years for $5.99 XFAT per year, and the domain will be live within a matter of minutes. I know it's just, I think, you know, people need to look beyond .com, look beyond .com, or for the Irish businesses, look beyond .ie. There's plenty of other domain extensions out there that, and you can get, might be able to get a cool, funky domain name that will, you know, speak for your business.
Speaking of .biz and I suppose business to business and online businesses and online services, we're delighted to welcome to the Technology.ie podcast our guest this morning, who is Alan O'Rourke of Spoilchild Design. You're based in County Meath, Alan, isn't that right?
We are, absolutely. Bennytown, little place by the sea.
Very good. Well, you're very welcome to the programme, Alan. And you've been, I suppose, well-known in the online community for a long time, Alan. You run Spoilchild Design. Tell me about the company and the history of it.
As you say, about 10 years we've been running, and we've built up a good profile for ourselves, both locally and internationally. So we've worked with clients such as Aircom, RTE, internationally, the likes of Virgin Atlantic, National Galleries of Scotland. So a good range of clients and markets.
I remember I was at a business conference once, Alan, that you and I both attended, and I remember you telling the story about very early on in the establishment of the company, you were nominated, was it for an Oscar or an Emmy?
For a BAFTA nomination.
A BAFTA, all right, very good. What was that for?
That was actually for the work we did for the National Galleries of Scotland.
Right.
So we worked for them for a good few months. I don't know if you know too much about the art galleries, but they can only ever display a minor fraction of the work in the space they have, so probably only around 10% of the amazing artworks that they have. So the National Galleries of Scotland decided to put together an interactive kiosk in the centre of Edinburgh, or a few kiosks, that would give people access to the vast archives they have of artwork from all over the world, giving information on the people who created the art, the history of it, and it was fantastic stuff.
Very good. And but I remember you talking about the time as for a new company, it was a bit of a challenge, I suppose, to respond to the increased level of business and the challenge, I suppose, that that resulted in.
But not a bad problem to have.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've all gone through the growing pains.
Yeah,
and we know what it's like.
Yeah. So you do graphic design, Alan, basically, for websites, or do you do for other platforms as well?
Predominantly website. That's what we'd be known for. But we work in print, worked in TV. For the last couple of years, we've been doing online gaming as well, for a couple of online gaming companies. And we're dipping our toes at the moment into mobile, more for fun than for business, just to explore the space and figure out how things work.
Do you think that people get it in when it comes to design, that companies invest enough in design and that they appreciate what the importance of design actually is?
The good ones do. I find it mixed. We've built a name for ourselves over the last few years that we tend to attract companies who already know the value of design and come to us because we have a name in that area. We do get people looking for quotes for design that are starting off, and you tend to find with them that it's very much price-based as opposed to knowing what the design can deliver for them long-term. And that can be a trickier relationship to negotiate.
But you do work that way. You do your best to sort of do the best you can within the budget.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It's at the end of the day, it's always about the budget and delivering value on that.
And Alan, tell me, have you ever known Michele to be this quiet for so long? are you there, Michele?
I'm still here.
I mean, I think, you know, the thing is, Colm, the reason why, you know, this kind of thing could work is because, you know, you're more than capable of talking, which is exactly what we need. I mean, the thing for me is the reason why I wanted Alan to come on for this was, apart from the fact that he's at the Netflix release with me on Friday night, was one of the things that for me, when I look at a lot of the businesses that are trying to get themselves online and, you know, the advertising and the marketing and everything else they're doing, it's the design element. Now, Alan, I mean, how many times do you look at websites and, you know, you feel kind of metaphorically that your eyes are going to bleed or fall out of your head or something?
All too often. I'm surprised I'm not wearing glasses.
The thing is this, like, let's say if you were talking to a startup, what would you say to them about the importance of design? If you had to sum it up as, you know, the kind of, how would I put it, like, you know, the tip when it comes to design, what would you say to them?
The tip, at the end of the day, it can make you money. That's it. So if you invest in design, the more money it'll give back to you at the far end of it. And it doesn't take a big investment. It doesn't take a long investment. It will drastically reduce the amount of effort you have to go to try and make a sale offline. It's all about the money with design. Mm.
And it's more than just graphic design as well, Alan, isn't it? I mean, there's the whole notion of usability and user interface design. Very often, people don't seem to give that the attention that deserves either.
And not at all. And you're moving into the whole area of landing page optimization and conversion there as well. You can spend a couple of hundred euros on an ad and get X return on that ad. Your automatic thinking is, if you want to double that return, you need to buy another ad. Well, if you spend a bit of time optimizing that ad to double the conversion of the first ad, then you're saving yourself a fortune over long term.
Yeah.
What about, Alan, does, you know, we can... Now anybody can, I suppose, go to WordPress.com, for example, or go to Squarespace or some site like this, and they can get a template off the shelf for free, or virtually for free. There's a whole load of, for example, WordPress templates that are out there, for example, that people can
use. Never mind the WordPress thing. I mean, you even look at the Getting Business Online service that we're offering.
What's that about, Michele? Tell me.
Well, I mean, no, it's just the... I mean, what Alan's...
Oh, yeah, you've got Getting Your Business Online, that's right. You've got that service as well, and you're offering a number of sort of pre-designed templates.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is this. I mean, it's like even there's also things like, you know, Template Monster, yeah. I think is the site, and a bunch of other ones. You can buy a complete website design and inverted commas for as little as $30 or $40. Mm. I mean, when we first started doing print advertising back in, what was it, 2003 or thereabouts, the first couple of ads we ran, I let the magazines do the ads for us in-house. And being blunt about it, they looked terrible. but since then, I've hired Alan over and over again to do them for us, which is part of the reason how I know him. But
for someone getting started, you know, a kind of off-the-shelf sort of template design can go a long way. And I know that you offer a similar service in relation to newsletters, Alan, don't you?
Absolutely, yeah. Basically, it's off-the-shelf templates for email newsletter design. Somewhat controversially, I'd say, within design circles, I'm all in favor of those template sites. If you're going online for the first time, you do not know how your customers are going to react. You do not know what exactly you need on your site. And you need to get up there as quickly as possible, in the most basic way possible, to experience that day-to-day before you really know what you need to do next in terms of design, usability, how you interact online or offline.
I mean, to reinforce that, I mean, if you buy a professional, you know, let's say, for example, using WordPress, a WordPress blog, if you buy a professional template from WooThemes or one of the other template places, I mean, you might pay, $30, $40, $50 for a single template, but it'll probably work in pretty much every browser. And, you know, people's eyes won't bleed when they look at the website. But, okay, it's not going to be a unique design. But surely having something that's presentable and not, what's the politically correct way of saying this, Alan?
Cheap and nasty?
Cheap and nasty. foul, disgusting, totally tasteless.
I suppose it's a scale, really, lads, isn't it? I mean, we're talking about, you can start off with something perhaps that you get free, then you can buy perhaps a custom, you know, you can buy a pre-designed template that you pay, as you say, $30 or 30 euros or something like that for. And ultimately, I suppose, depending on the kind of business you're in, the kind of business you're doing, if you can justify it, you can get to the situation perhaps where you are, Michele, where you have, where you contract Alan to do design for you or someone like him.
Well, I mean, the thing, but I mean, we've reached the stage now where I actually have a designer who works for us pretty much full time.
Yeah.
Working on various different things. And I mean, we still use Alan and other companies to do other things for us. But I wouldn't have, if you'd asked me, you know, a few years ago, would that ever happen? I'd have probably laughed at you. But I mean, we still see companies that, you know, they've got great confidence in themselves. You know, oh, look at our wonderful website. You look at the website and you're just kind of going, oh my God, you know, why would I buy anything from this person? I mean, the photos are terrible. They're out of focus, or they upload like a 20 meg JPEG and resize it in the HTML by just changing the parameters of the IMG tag. I mean, what the hell? Like, Alan, you've probably seen a few design disasters in the past.
I've had my fair share. I've seen my fair share of design disasters. Mm. Absolutely. The one particular recent job that we were involved in for landing page optimization, and these guys were pumping thousands and thousands each month into marketing. Offline marketing, TV marketing, and they were bringing all these people to their website, which was, as you were saying earlier, it was making my eyes burn.
Yeah.
But they were bringing them to a sign-up page that was basically asking for their credit card details with absolutely no reason as to why that person would want to hand over their credit card details.
Yeah, I've seen that happen with a lot of these companies, and you're there scratching your head, just kind of going, you know, why are you doing this?
It just seems such a waste of resources.
They were throwing away their entire marketing effort in getting that traffic there in the first place.
Yeah, yeah.
Or what about the ones who ask you for things like, you know, something like your date of birth? It's like, I'm signing up for a newsletter. What difference does it make?
And there's a lot of forms like this that ask for details that they find out anyway, like where are you from, which you can find out from the IP in most cases. Why are you here when you can already track the referral in most cases? Asking for too much unnecessary information up front is probably one of the biggest reasons people lose money online with design.
And I mean, the other thing for me is like I get quite upset about is, you know, you go onto these websites and there's no contact details.
Yeah.
Like I was, somebody sent me a link to a website this morning and, you know, they're in, you know, stealth mode, which is like, you know, hello. And it's like, you know, you're in stealth mode, but yet you're saying you've got these kind of A-list clients. Well, could you at least give me contact details that might work? And they're sending me to a Twitter account that has never tweeted or has the default graphic. Jeez, that's great. And you want me to sign up for your newsletter and yet you don't confirm it? Not happy.
The thing is about stuff like that, the data is out there with the modicum of research. There's been numerous case studies just putting on a prominent phone number. Even in most cases, no one even rings that number that's on the site. But the very fact that they can see a phone number when they're about to hand over credit card details gives them tremendous comfort and security when they're doing that, and they continue with the process.
This is it. I mean, the other thing as well is like, you know, the phone number be to a physical line, even if it's some VoIP service that redirects your mobile. But I mean, if I go to an e-commerce site and the only number on there is an 086 or an 085 or an 087 mobile number, you know, my confidence in that is, you know, gone. And I spend a lot of money online.
Alan, as I mentioned at the earlier in the programme before you joined us, we're recording this on the 4th of October. Later in the day, there's going to be an announcement by Apple and we're anticipating new lovely gadgets and things like that. Would it be fair to say that, or could I ask you, a lot of people have made a lot of commentary in relation to Apple and the success of the iPod and iPhones and iPads and Apple's importance, the importance Apple as a company has attached to design, perhaps when others weren't doing it so much in the computer market, in the PC market. Apple, when they came out with the iMacs and all of that, really sort of put an emphasis on the physical hardware design and presentation. Would it be fair to say that would be a company that you would hold up perhaps as an icon or an example of a company appreciating the value of design? And are there other pioneers or leaders out there that you find particularly inspiring?
Well, Apple are amazing, absolutely amazing. And what I love about them is how they apply their design methodology around their entire service to support their hardware. There's a lot of joined up thinking in there that is... which is amazing. And somewhat unsexily, I'd have to add Dyson to the list of amazing designs and amazing designers. How they approach the simplest of problems that we all thought had been solved decades ago.
Going back to first principles, really, is kind of a hallmark of what they've done, isn't it?
Sorry, I missed that.
Sorry, I was just saying going back to first principles really is a hallmark of what they've done. In fact, perhaps it's a hallmark of both Apple's and Dyson's approaches. Would you say that might be the case, that they approach things with an open mind and with an original approach and say, you know, what is actually needed at this interface?
Definitely. Yeah. And you know they have scores of people who are going out and they're sitting in rooms and they're just watching people and how they do stuff and how they try to do stuff and the problems they encounter.
It's no wonder you're having trouble hearing me. You're hammering away on the keyboard there, Michaela. Are you working on something else or are you still...
I'm multitasking as usual, Colin. For God's sake, man. What do you expect? I actually just sent out a couple of tweets there from one of the Twitter accounts that we control, just kind of saying, you know, looking for feedback on various different things to do with this podcast. No, I mean, the thing is, I mean, you know, it's great having somebody like Alan on. I hope we'll be able to get a few other interesting people to come on over the coming weeks. I mean, it's just, you know, if there's things that people think we should be talking about, or they hate what we're talking about, or they hate me, or they hate you, and or sure nobody hates you, sure you're a sweet man. you know, what did we describe you in that press release we put out last week?
A rock of sense, was it? No, a common sense or no nonsense approach, and that was fantastic. Actually, I tweeted about that. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. If you've ever wondered who writes this stuff, and I mean that in a good way, it was. Did you see the press release, Alan?
I didn't.
Alan, now we're very, very, very sad.
It made reference to Neilan's comic. What was it? Comic irrepressible delivery. Comic delivery and my no nonsense approach. I think that was it. Listen, Alan, it's been great having you on. Michaela, it's always a pleasure. Alan, where can people find out more about what you do and what you're at?
If they head to toddle.com, okay. That's toddle.com, we got a great marketing blog there and talking about various research and processes we go through. And spoilchild.com as well, is where you'll also find us.
Excellent. And of course, you'll find Michaela at blacknight.com. And don't forget, there's a special offer at the moment on .biz domains. We'll be back next week, Michaela. You'll be on the road, I think, from next week. Or are we going to record it? I think we're going to record it a little bit early. You're off to Paris next week, you were telling me.
Yeah, AFNIC, which is the .fr domain registry, are celebrating 25 years of .fr, and they're having a super duper event in the Eiffel Tower. So I somehow managed to get myself invited to that, so I thought I'd head over to it, because we're a .fr registrar and we'll be offering .fr domain names to Irish consumers starting the middle of next month.
Okay, we might talk about that then as well. Michaela, thanks indeed, and don't forget, anyone who wants to get in touch, you can leave comments or contact us through the website at technology.ie. Until next week, slán go fóill.